Hello and welcome back to the Bentley Priory Museum podcast. This is in fact the last episode in the series of Defending Britain from Nazi and Nuclear Threat. So as we draw to a close, this episode will be all about reflection. Myself, Tim and Dave will reflect on our time as volunteers, not only conducting the interviews, helping curate the exhibition, and of course our experience making the podcast. We are also joined by Chloe Marley, the project coordinator, who will give us an insight behind the museum's vision for the project and why they applied to the National Lottery Heritage Fund to secure funding to make this project come alive. Also reflecting on difficulties through COVID, and also we will hear some feedback from visitors and participants of the project. So without further ado, let's hear what Chloe has to say.
My name is Chloe Marley and I'm the project officer for Bentley Priory's Bunker project. My role is to manage the project from start to finish, which includes volunteer recruitment and training, coordinating the project outputs, managing the project budget, promoting the project, and working with other staff to ensure this all happens on time and within budget. The project has been funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, and so in addition, I also need to ensure we deliver what the funders are expecting and report back our progress. It's a wonderfully varied role, which is what makes it so interesting, and being able to work with such a great team of staff and volunteers is of course another big bonus. Volunteers have been integral to the project as they are to the museum, and we are so grateful for the enthusiasm and dedication which they bring. For this project, we were able to offer oral history training and volunteers have recorded 20 interviews with personnel who used to work in the bunker. This is the first time that we've explored the history of our bunker, and so these interviews are so important in filling a gap in our knowledge and ensuring that these memories are preserved for the future. We were also able to offer exhibition text writing training to help volunteers to produce snappy and engaging text as part of the exhibition development. They were able to use their interviews to produce really engaging content for the exhibitions, and with our reduced visitor capacity during the COVID restrictions, have also developed a podcast to reach a wider audience. We currently have two exhibitions on display as part of the Bunker project. A temporary exhibition is on display until the end of the year, which showcases the interviews carried out as part of the project and gives visitors a chance to listen to first-hand accounts of what the bunker was like. And our permanent exhibition is now open alongside the huge blast door of the bunker, giving an insight into its history and the important role which it had for so many years. We hope that being involved in projects such as this, combined with the training which we integrate, gives our volunteers skills for the future and a platform for developing their own ideas. Volunteering is a two-way process, and we always want to ensure that we give our volunteers the opportunities and experiences to develop their own areas of interest. This has been especially tricky this year. Trying to manage a project with government guidelines changing so often was a huge challenge, and it proved difficult to give volunteers clear information on where the project was heading and what changes we were going to need to make. Now the project is coming to an end, we've had an opportunity to reflect on what we have achieved and have been so proud given how disruptive the last year has been. We have managed to produce two exhibitions, a talks programme, schools resources, family activities and early years resources, all inspired by the interviews gathered by our volunteers. We've all had to learn how to work remotely, which took some time, but has also brought new opportunities for the museum going forward. On a final note, we do hope you will come and enjoy the bunker exhibitions at the museum, which we've worked so hard to produce. And if you have any memories which you'd like to share, then please do get in touch. Our Bentley Priory Bunker project was developed to record and share the memories of RAF and WAF personnel who worked in the top secret bunker at RAF Bentley Priory, in particular focusing on the key historical periods of the Battle of Britain and the Cold War. The underground bunker was completed in haste in 1940 as Nazi Germany threatened to invade Britain and was developed for use throughout the Cold War period as political tensions remained high. Personnel within the bunker at Bentley Priory during both historical periods were responsible for identifying enemy encroachment of British airspace and coordinating the RAF's response. RAF and WAF personnel worked underground in the bunker on long shifts, with periods of intense activity interspersed with periods of unsettling quiet. After nearly 70 years of internationally important work, the bunker closed in 2008 when the RAF left Bentley Priory. Since the museum opened in 2013, visitors have highlighted the lack of interpretation on the heritage of the bunker. Feedback has included: "My only disappointment was not having more information about the underground control room with its immense historical significance, and it would have been good to have had more information about the work that the men and women did in the underground bunker. By delivering this project, we hope to fill this gap in our history. The heritage is important to people living locally in Harrow too, who are proud of the history of the site, but due to high levels of security and secrecy, for 70 years were not actually aware of the critical work undertaken in the bunker. We wanted to deliver the project in 2020 as this marked the 30th anniversary of the reunification of Germany, symbolising the beginning of the end of the Cold War, and the 80th anniversary of the Battle of Britain. I'd like to share with you some feedback from some of the participants who were interviewed as part of the project. I'm extremely proud of my RAF service, and thanks to you the memories have flooded back. It has been an absolute pleasure working with you on this project and having the opportunity to talk about a very important part of my life in the RAF. The project has resurrected memories of camaraderie and experiences that I will always be proud of. Thanks for giving the whole the recognition it deserves. We've also received some fantastic feedback from the exhibition that we've produced as part of the project, including, "We have lived locally for over 30 years and didn't know the history of this area nor the importance of this building." Very interesting, so much information from behind the scenes that we weren't aware of at the time. Super exhibition. I really enjoyed listening to the information from the people who worked in the bunker.
I don't know about you, but it's been wonderful hearing some of the feedback from the visitors to the exhibition. Now, it's interesting because this next segment of the podcast, which will actually take you right to the end, is strange for me and Tim and Dave, because even though we've been working together on these for the last year, this is the first time we've actually sat down together on a Zoom call. You know, everything's kind of been online. We have briefly met one another in different ways, but this was the first time that we've all sat down and actually recorded an episode together. So, I hope you enjoy listening to our thoughts and our feelings. And, you know, we've kind of expressed things that we've never had chance to say before to our listeners. And to ourselves, actually. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy that. Here we go.
So now I'm joined by Dave.
Hi, Alex.
And also Tim.
Hi, Alex.
Good to have us all together for what will actually be our first recording all together. So I the first question I want to ask you is why did you get involved with the Oral Histories project in the first place? And let's hear from Dave first, because I know his background is a little bit more interesting.
Oh, interesting perhaps for me, but maybe not for others. I put chance upon this, actually. Originally, this was an invitation over the internet to academics, of which I'm not, but I was looking at the history of the museum itself. When it was the actual priory. And the invitation was looking for people that had experience of interviewing and research, both of which I was experienced in to a certain degree. So I just, on the very last day, actually, of the application, just pinged off a very simple email asking perhaps if I could assist. As easy as that. Okay, how about you, Tim?
In a way, very similar. In another way, quite different. I chanced on the project, came across a post on Facebook by the museum looking for volunteers to get involved. As we were in lockdown, I thought that might not be too bad an idea. But I've had a lifelong interest in Royal Air Force history, so it just seemed to me an ideal opportunity to get involved in something practical that related to that history.
Okay, so I got involved. I've kind of been interested in history, like definitely war history and exhibitions. My background is primarily in sound, and so the idea of working with Oral Histories was very fascinating, and obviously it was about a project that was also of interest to me as well. Of course, like both Tim and Dave, you know, we were in lockdown, and I come across the post, and I thought this was a good opportunity to gain some experience and do something different and new with my time. And Also, what attracted me was the fact that they wanted the volunteers to help curate the exhibition and be involved with that. And that's something that I very much wanted to do, and I also did in the coming months of the project.
Brilliant. I mean, that's really interesting when you reflect on that. It's the first time the three of us have spoken about that. And it's three different ways in and three different kind of motivating factors for getting involved. So, yeah, really interesting mix there. So once involved, about your role, Alex, or roles?
Yes. So I think like, you know, obviously everyone, we all started to interview different people that used to work in the bunker. But from then, for myself, having this background in sound and also exhibitions and curating, I started to help preparing the content ready to go out into the exhibition, editing the sound, making sure everything sounded very good. It's a reasonable standard for in the exhibition. Of course, it was quite interesting as well, because a lot of us that were involved, you know, hadn't ever done this before. So, you know, we had training, but again, in lockdown, it was interesting. Some online, some happened to be in person, but actually the in-person ones become a bit more problematic because you get background noise. But that's to be expected, you know, especially when, you know, we're talking about people that have never done this before. So that's okay. So that involved, you know, some more editing and, you know, to make it sound okay for the exhibition. I also helped out in the exhibition with sort of the design, the layout. I visited the exhibition while we're still, kind of coming out of lockdown, but the museum wasn't open at that point. And I had a look around and helped suggest some ideas and some things to do for that. And then also, just as well, the week before the exhibition opened, I visited. And I helped install the sound and the multimedia that I also helped create, along with a soundtrack. So I mixed that on site as well. And then, of course, now with the podcast also, it's a similar thing with the sound, editing and putting that all together. So, yeah, been quite involved, actually, thinking and reflecting on it. Yeah.
It's certainly been a busy 12 months, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely has. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, thinking about that, what about you, Dave? How are you? What was your role in supporting?
Well, I originally was going to do some original research before COVID. The idea was to go to places like to Hendon, perhaps, to look at their archive. And the British Library and the London Metropolitan Archive to have a look for any material that had been declassified. But of course, COVID hit, so everything closed down. So we were kind of down research-wise back to material that was accessible online and in libraries. So I went from that to actually interviewing people, which to me was the best ever. I mean, just to have that reach out to the people that had served in the bunker itself. And I was very fortunate enough to span the entire life of the bunker by interviewing Gladys Eaver, who at the age of 19 was one of the tranche first nine to actually go down into the hole. And if you go onto the website, our podcasts are on the Battle of Britain tab, and hers is episode 2 called Down the Hole. She later features as well in one of the follow-up podcasts. And then when we touched on the Royal Observer Corps, I had the pleasure to interview one of the observers. So that brought us right the way through the Cold War up to contemporary times with the experience of the Cold War itself. And I interviewed one of the trustees. So I had the overview of the museum itself. So from somebody who would have been running around dusty libraries and everything looking for material there, I actually had the pleasure in speaking firsthand to the people that actually were in the bunker itself, which to me was far more interesting to do. And I believe interesting for our listeners as well. Okay, Tim, how about you?
Yeah, similar kind of a far wider range of involvement than I kind of anticipated when I volunteered. The obvious thing was the conducting the interviews. The less obvious thing was conducting interviews via Zoom, which we were forced to do at the time. That was a great experience for me, given my interest in RAF history. It was fascinating to get the opportunity to interview two very senior retired Royal Air Force officers with a connection with Bentley Priory, strong connection with Bentley Priory, as well as, as you say, Dave, the people who served there, some really fascinating discussions. Well, not discussions, because they were interviews, but fascinating accounts that were given by them, and at times amusing accounts too, and quite moving accounts. Once the interviews were done, I got involved in some of the underpinning research for the exhibitions, including trying to find some images for use in the exhibition. Helped in drafting some elements of the panels for the exhibition, which was, again, for me, new and both interesting and challenging, you know, kind of writing in a different way to the way that I've been used to through my career. And then, of course, came the working with you two guys, which was entirely unexpected, entirely new to me. I basically wouldn't have known a podcast from a jigsaw puzzle before we started, and some would say I probably don't now. But, you know, that's proved really interesting, because it's fresh and it was new to me. And working with you two guys has been a bit of a gas as well. It's been really enjoyable.
Yeah, we've had some fun, haven't we, along the way?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you feel that way, and it hasn't all been terrible, and it's positive. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting experience for all of us, and we've just touched there on the three of us working together. Actually, originally on the podcast, there were four of us. We mustn't forget Eve. But Alex, you kind of, which other volunteers have you worked with? And it's a secondary question there for you. You know, in what ways did you get engaged with the museum staff?
Yeah, okay. So other volunteers, I remember when before we were starting the interviews, there was some time where, you know, we started sort of contacting each other, volunteers, and we had some little meetings between us to practice interviewing each other in, you know, before doing the real thing. So, yeah, there were some volunteers I worked with on that, and, you know, just to help support them. I had some sort of previous experience with interviewing, so that kind of went okay. That's good. And then, yeah, museum staff. Obviously, Chloe, I worked a lot with her, with the sound for the exhibition, with the media, and also, as I touched on previously, for the actual layout and design of the space. So, yeah, that was good. And also, I had contact with some of the other senior members of the museum, just arranging things and, you know, organizing different parts of it. So I feel like I've, you know, been quite fully integrated with the museum team in one way or another. So, yeah, it's been a good year. And, you know, I've met lots of good people through doing it. So, it's yeah, I'm very happy with that. Yeah, obviously, it wasn't just myself. What about you, Dave? Who have you worked with and met since working on this project?
Well, my reflection kind of mirrors both of you, really, because when we were practicing interviewing at the early stages, when we had some training, even I had to completely throw out the window all of my interview techniques from when I was working professionally, because it's very much like, this is very much active listening. So you have to ask a question and sit. And before you sit down with your subject, you have to say to them, look, I am interested in what you're saying. I will be intonating with you, but I won't be saying anything because it will come out on the tape. So there's no point in me asking you a question and you giving a very interesting answer and me going, that's interesting halfway through. So I kind of had to retrain myself to do that. During the training itself, we had some other volunteers. When we had our practice run, there was one gentleman that I interviewed. Subject matter was fascinating. He was doing a dissertation into rock found in outer space, I kid you not, and how it appeared in the Bible. So you go back these thousands of years to how our ancestors and predecessors view things like meteorites and stuff. And I'm just sitting there thinking, blimey, it's absolutely fascinating. So, very similar there. And I'm very lucky. I live very, very locally to the museum. So, as Tim said, actively writing stuff. When all of us sat and wrote different pieces for the podcasts and for each other. I mean, I can remember the Eyes and Ears series that we did. We did three episodes. And with Tim as our technical expert, I wrote a piece on a beautiful window, which is in the museum that you can see. So I was very lucky to be able to just jump in my car, trot 5 minutes down the road and go and stand and look at this thing in the sunlight and the daylight and gain some inspiration for the words to use in relation to other material that is already in existence online. So I guess that was my piece of original research, all very selfish, I'm afraid, but to have the opportunity to do that. And of course, to do that, I then had to interact with the museum staff themselves. I've been to the museum, as I say before, but I'd never actually had that interaction with the staff and the management there. And of course, the other volunteers who don't volunteer on the podcast, but they volunteer actually at the museum itself so that guests can go along and have a safe and enjoyable time and who have a vast knowledge of everything that's in the museum itself. I did a little bit of training to be a steward there, but I have other roles. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to dedicate much time to that, but I know that in the future, I will certainly come back and do that. So it's been an absolute pleasure all round and really opened, broadened my horizons for a museum that's just up the road to actually get into the nuts and bolts of it. It's been absolutely fascinating. And impart that to our listeners as well, hopefully.
Yeah, I just want to add actually there, thinking about what you said, Dave, like the people we spoke to that were volunteers as well. There was such a broad age range of people. I'm kind of one of the younger ones, but there were people younger than me as well. But then you had people on the opposite end of the spectrum. They're like really old, they know their stuff. A bit like Tim, though he's not that old. There's some older than him, but it's really fascinating. And I think that in itself was a good opportunity because, you don't get to work with that kind of age range of people every day and on a subject that everyone's interested in. So I think that's very something I really enjoyed about this as well. I don't know if you've got anything else to add, Tim, to that about your experience working with people.
It's been, I think, as you said, Alex, the range of people that have managed to get involved with from Chloe and the staff at the museum through to the excellent team of volunteers there. The range of knowledge and experience and age and background has itself been really interesting to get engaged with and stimulating, I have to say, different roles, different perspectives, different ideas, different ways of looking at things. Been really, really good.
So, Dave, what training did you receive as part of the exhibition and interview process?
Well, interestingly, it was online, so it was going back to college again, and we had an absolutely fascinating presentation by one of the oral curators at the British Library, and very, very privileged to have that as well, where she ran through the whole process of, I think I touched on it earlier, about active listening and things. And one of my big bugbears, which I've mentioned a couple of times, is the way you ask a question, closed questioning, opening questions, rhetorical questioning, making statements, To the extent of, oh, so you did that, which we don't want to do. It's got to be very open and general because we're asking a question for somebody to react to. So I found that really, really interesting. There was also another part, there was a creative, like an interactive presentation that we had, where I'm sure that our listeners, many have been to exhibitions where you walk past something and it comes to life. You know, there's a little pressure pad in the floor, or you walk past a beam and a light comes on or something like that. Because originally, for the temporary project, was down in a rotunda, and we were discussing amongst ourselves how we were going to present that in a limited space. To a certain extent, I have hearing loss in the upper range, so I was quite interested in things like the dynamics of how the sound would bounce, and we were talking about whether we should put carpet down or stuff on the wall. Alex was very helpful in that because of his experience with sound, as a sound engineer, of course. But the one that I did miss out on was the creative writing part. I couldn't attend that, but I understand that Tim was on that as well as the others.
Yeah.
So what did I miss, Tim?
You missed a good session. it was actually entitled Exciting Writing. And it was, after a lifetime of writing reports in fairly bold terms, it was quite challenging, actually, to be invited to think of how to engage with, you know, engage people's emotions as well as their interest, and to be able to convey through writing kind of short, sharp messages that people wouldn't necessarily get bored with, but if they were sufficiently interested, they might want to kind of follow up in terms of learning from different aspects of the exhibition or doing some further research themselves. So for me, that exciting writing course, which was conducted again online on Zoom, very interactive and new to me anyway, and made me, whenever I've had the limited opportunity due to COVID to visit museums ever since, it's really made me think about the way in which a museum presents its collections and presents the story that it wants to tell, and uses that to help move people around a site. Really, really new to me and well worth learning. Yeah.
And Tim, do you think the training that you received, has it helped with these podcasts, like while we've been making them and writing? Obviously, you know, we've had to script parts and put it all together. Has that training helped with that as well?
I think it has, actually. Yeah, I think particularly the interview training, as Dave said, you know, that active listening. And I think when you're recording an interview specifically for a podcast, being aware of the challenges that you face, Alex, as our technical wizard, you know, learning or trying to learn not to interrupt and to make sure that there isn't any background noise that could detract from the interview you're conducting, trying to make questions as clear as you can. I think thinking about the podcast themselves and how they were put together, you know, I have I think because of my background, a kind of logical way of thinking of things. And it never quite struck me, even having watched television and films all my life, that you don't necessarily need to put something together, you know, do it as a sequence in a set sequence, that actually you can edit and move about and help things to progress more smoothly, simply by basically cutting and pasting sound in a way. So that was, yeah, and it sounds weird, but I just found that really interesting to get hold of that concept. But without the training, in interview techniques. I wouldn't have perhaps made the first step and had the discipline trying not to interrupt people and to be quiet when people were speaking. And as Dave said earlier on, that active listening rather than the passive listening. And I think the writing probably came into, as you, Alex, said, would when I've had to been asked to script bits of podcasts. That gave me a different perspective of not being, trying not to be long and wordy about things, but a bit more punchy and to try to get to questions and prompts or statements that kind of tried to engage the emotions as well as the intellect.
I think it's really interesting. And you know, I just want to pick up actually on what you were saying with the way, you know, interviews are conducted and, you know, copying and pasting and moving sound about, you know. And I think that's obviously something that people that have been listening to these podcasts, you know, they won't know. So I think it's a good thing to tell them. And you know, I kind of want to expand on that. And you know, not that anyone done a bad job on this, you know, we're all like interviewing, like I said, everyone was new, you know, pretty new to this, so you know, everyone had a challenge and you know, they all did very well. But I think what we found while trying to use oral histories and then turning them into a podcast, at times it was very challenging because you know, these, they hadn't been recorded for that purpose, so even though it's still sound, you know, they had a different way, you know, like you would have someone ask a question and then someone would answer, but they would answer directly, like straight away. Where sort of like in a podcast, it, you know, or that kind of environment where you need to use material, I think it's really good that, you know, the person who's responding kind of replies to your question, like it, you know, make sure they mention what you've said. So then it carries on, because otherwise what you end up with is this sort of disjointed thing that sounds like a conversation, but a conversation don't exist. And you know, so that, yeah, that kind of posed some challenges. And you know, I had to do a lot of cutting about and moving stuff from like one part of a interview to another part just so it made sense. And you know, all these kind of things, which you know, as you're listening, well, I don't know, maybe you do know if I did a bad job, but hopefully if I did a good job you wouldn't know. And you know, on top of that as well, that's why, you know, I guess we've just sort of been putting these podcasts out and we haven't really had any feedback or haven't really spoke to the people that are listening to this. And we know that there's people listening to this by the stats, so that's very good. But you know, we never explained that, you know, at one point we sort of changed this in conversation style, and that was exactly why we did that, because it was becoming so hard and so time consuming to get these oral histories and try and turn them into a podcast. And you know, I was getting self-conscious that things weren't making sense or it wasn't as good as it could be. So by doing this in conversation style, it just made more sense because it would flow and, you know, we wouldn't have those problems that we mentioned. So, yeah, I think it's just really good that I can actually tell everyone that now. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at the end.
I think the main thing I kind of learned from the process of making the podcast that again had never struck me before at all, and that's the simple thing about voice and intonation. You know, I remember listening to one early podcast that I had something to say in, and I thought, you know, wow, I don't even sound like a news reader. It's a bit boring, that, Tim. Just in the way that your voice projects and sounding interested, and you know, without that visual kind of key for people to get hooked on, you become much, much more aware of whether your voice is projecting the kind of message that the words want to give. Yeah.
Thinking about it, throughout the podcast, we didn't use music to any great extent, and it wasn't a conscious decision to either do that or not do that. But with the permanent exhibition, we did, to very good effect, because it was a different experience. The permanent exhibition is outside, it encapsulates the actual bunker itself. The visitors to the museum can see a tangible thing, the great big blast doors. And on the way from the museum itself, there's a trail that we've created. And there are some sounds, some interactive sounds units there that Alex had a big part in designing and creating. How did that come about, Alex?
Yeah, so, obviously, one of the reasons, as I mentioned at the start, you know, I wanted to be involved in this project because of, you know, this element of sort of co-creating in a way, which, you know, is really unique in itself. But, being from a sound background, my role was to make sure sound existed. And actually, you know, outside it proved difficult because there's no electricity. So how do you get sound without electricity? Well, I mean, luckily, we live in a time with some modern technology. But ironically, actually, also some old kinds of technology played its role as well. But I created a sound walk that as you walk up to the bunker, you can listen to that. And that has a lot more sort of sound effects in, which on reflection, you know, I kind of wish we did more with the podcast. And, you know, that's something, if we make more in the future, that's something I definitely want to do. So yeah, there's that, but that uses a QR code. So, you know, on your phone or whatever device you have. So that's sort of like the modern side. But when you get to the actual bunker itself, we used a unit called U-Turn, which is, it plays 8 different tracks of sound. And how it's powered is actually by turning a wheel, and that creates kinetic energy, which then enables it to play the sound as if it, you know, it was on an electronic device. So, I think it just works really well there. And it's an interesting way of being able to bring sound to visitors in a place that probably wouldn't have ever had sound if I wasn't involved, to be honest. Not without sounding big-headed, but, you know, I think, you know, I really helped with that. So,
brilliant.
That's good. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so, Dave, how do you think, you know, obviously we've mentioned that we were doing this, you know, during lockdown. How do you think that COVID has affected us as a podcast team, and has it helped and hindered the process at all?
I think overwhelmingly it's helped. I mean, just to be able to do this remotely. I live close to the museum, and I think the three of us geographically are very diverse away. In fact, I sit in Cyprus at the moment as we're recording this. So it just goes to show that we've got the ability to tap in online anywhere and be able to work successfully with each other. It kind of surprised me, really, because the original concept were that we were going to go and visit other sites, and we were going to have a look at other museums and see how they worked and do lots of stuff around that. But COVID, as we know, has affected so many people in so many tragic ways. I think that this way of working, because of the pandemic, has been an absolute success. And, you know, the museum's opened again. It partially opened at our temporary exhibition. We've managed to get that done in time for the opening, because we've been able to collaborate online, which we never would have been able to do before. So it was a success in that respect. And then when the museum opened again, we were able to put the permanent exhibitions together, because in the meantime, we've been able to collaboratively work online with each other. I mean, even we mentioned Eve earlier, one of our colleagues, you know, she was in Scotland, or she is in Scotland, and contributed fantastically towards the project. So I would say, as tragic as it is, an awful, awful pandemic, for us, working from home, like many other people, I think it's been a great success.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, especially us as a team, you know, it's kind of brought us closer together in a way. I mean, you know, we're meeting online, which is weird, but at the same time, it's kind of, I feel like we've formed some sort of connection through that probably wouldn't have ever happened had it not have been like this. So, yeah, I think that's really great. And Tim, I mean, do you have anything you want to add to that as well?
I'd agree with you absolutely, Alex, actually, that, you know, given the really tragic circumstances that kind of underpin it, not wanting to kind of b- belittle those in any kind of way, but it just strikes me this wouldn't have happened. You know, we wouldn't have, it's not that we wouldn't have been able to do it. I think the technology clearly already existed, and it could have happened. I think the circumstances perhaps just brought about a different way of thinking. You know, something had to happen, and we looked to technology to make it happen. It's a really hammy, not very clear way of explaining it, but, you know, basically it could have happened before, but people wouldn't have thought of doing it in that way before. It would have been maybe physically getting a team together, because you can collaborate more easily when you see each other face to face and all the rest of it, and you spark ideas off each other. But I think all of that has happened online for us. You know, we have been sparking ideas off each other. We have been actually eyeballing each other, and having a laugh and being serious and having the water cooler moments as we have various non-alcoholic drinks. But yeah, it's, I just think it's simply actually, I don't think would have happened without that terrible background.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I think, at least I hope, you know, us doing this during, you know, that time, it's given people something to listen to, as well as, you know, us something to do. And yeah, I mean, I'm positive we have listeners that have been coming back month after month to listen. And, you know, hopefully that's something that, you know, they might have looked forward to, or at least, you know, found some benefit from in such a bad time. And I think, you know, obviously we've also been able to support the museum in a way that, you know, they wouldn't have had before. You know, they were closed for months on end, and, you know, we've been able to provide something that kind of covers that closure with something different. So yeah, I think, you know, all in all, as you know, everyone else said it, you know, it's bad circumstances, but, you know, it's definitely been a positive for this project, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I sincerely hope that we have brought something positive to people in a bad time. It would be nice to think that we'd made a positive contribution to people's lives, as well as promoting history and heritage.
Yeah.
Okay, Alex. What do you think's been the most successful thing to have come out of this experience from your perspective?
Yeah, so I think the most successful thing, I mean, for me, if I'm being a bit more personal, you know, is just, not that I haven't learned to work with people before, of course I've worked with people all the time, but I've learned to work with people of a different age to myself, so that's been really good. And also, you know, just in a different way online, you know, it's prepared me for that. I mean, actually, you know, it prepared me for my studies. I'm currently doing an MA now. I've kind of started that in the middle of doing this. And, you know, I feel like this project was the start for me of doing stuff online. And then that carried on once I was studying. So, you know, I feel like this kind of really was a starting point for that. And it gave me sort of some sort of encouragement in doing that. So that's, you know, for me personally, that's a successful thing. And, you know, as I've mentioned, and I'm sure I will always mention, you know, I think successfully, you know, it helped the museum, or at least I hope that it helped the museum over a difficult period. So, you know, I think just getting the, you know, we've hit over 1,000 downloads now since we've started this. So, you know, that's, to me, is a very, very big thing. And that's the most successful thing in it all. You know, I never envisioned we'd have 500, let alone 1,000. So I think we can all be very proud of ourselves for that. So, yeah, Dave, what about you? What's been the most successful thing for you?
Yeah, all around everything. I mean, the temporary museum exhibition that we did, I think that's a triumph for as it is, for the limited space there is down there. There's some props. And we've got our interviews on little recording devices that visitors can listen to. There's a biography of the person that's been interviewed, which is really interesting, as all the people are interesting. And to go there and see the pin board on the wall where there are cards where visitors have been able to just give a couple of lines about what they, you know, you see them in museums, how was your experience today? And just to see the very, very positive comments that many people of all ages, as we've mentioned age, people of all ages have put. And there's some pride in that as well, I think, certainly, because we've played a part in that. It's not just been the online stuff. The online stuff was born out of the interviews. The interviews then gave way to the temporary exhibition, and the temporary exhibition gave way to the permanent exhibition. So I think if you join the dots, overall, it's been an absolute triumph. I mean, there's been some stumbles along the way, but I think overall, I would reflect that the whole thing has been a success.
Yeah, I'd go with that, Dave. I think it's been great to feel that we've been involved in doing things that have reached people via different routes, you know, the exhibition, the podcasts, interviewing people. It's been really, really interesting. It's, you know, we've seen success on the ground in the fact that the exhibition's opened in themselves. As you say, Alex, we've seen success in terms of the number of downloads for the podcast, which is really nice. And I'd reflect something that you said, Alex. It's been great for me at my advancing age, actually, to get so stimulated by working with you and with Dave and with Eve, particularly on the podcasts, being reminded as an oldie that there are different perspectives and different experiences, and again, being able to get excited about doing something with other people has been really great. So, having had and reflected on their really good stuff, guys, now is the time to say to you, and what did you find most challenging? Alex?
Okay, yeah, I mean, most challenging. You know, I suppose it's kind of, you know, I reflected earlier, you know, working on the sound for this was very hard at times, you know, due to different circumstances. So that, you know, that put some pressure on what, you know, I was doing editing-wise. I think that's probably the main thing. You know, there's with anything creative, any project, you know, especially spanning over the time we've been working on this, is always going to be ups and downs and parts where you kind of almost want to give up. But, you know, you find the strength actually through the people that you're working with to carry on. And I think, you know, that's the most important thing. So even though, there is bad stuff and that's unavoidable, it's, working with a team of people that you get along with well to support you is the main thing.
Brilliant. How about you, Dave?
I'm sitting here chuckling away because I'm thinking of the door, the blast door, that blasted blast door. There was in the early times when we were planning the permanent exhibition, we had a parliament about what would be fun to how to incorporate it. And I think we decided what we might do for the children part of the exhibition as well, to bring school children in. We'd have something along the lines of, with the bunker, how many Olympic-sized swimming pools worth of earth were removed? You know, the usual sort of stuff, double-decker buses high, Nelson's column, all this sort of thing. And I thought it'd be quite fun to work out how much the blast door weighed. It was my nemesis. So I went down there and measured the thing, and then, being locked down, couldn't get any further on how to work out how much a steel door that weighs so much, that measures so much by so much. So I kind of got my measurements all wrong. It's been a long time since I was at school, and I triumphantly worked out it weighed about the same as a Spitfire. And I learned that there wasn't an algorithm. There isn't an algorithm. If somebody can please help me and just send me this thing. If there's an algorithm how to work out how much a steel door weighs, I can't find it. But there's a very broad one that you put into the internet and the wonders of the internet. If something is so high, so wide and so deep, and then you find the composite of what it's made of. So it could be paper, it could be flimsy stuff. Steel, there it is on the dropdown. Bang, put in steel and it weighs X, Y, Z. Multiplied by how many Spitfires that weighs. Nah, it still wasn't working. So then we tried to do the width of it is the width of a Hurricane aircraft. And I was going round and round and round in circles. And I hit this genius idea of contacting a steel door manufacturing company up in a ball place in Sheffield, as you'd expect. So I rang them up and I spoke to the young lady on the telephone who'd never heard of the Battle of Britain. She'd never heard of Bentley Priory. She hadn't got a clue what I was talking about, and very politely put me through to a number that doesn't exist. So that was the end of that. So I emailed them and carried on and carried on and carried on, and eventually got through to their production department, who sympathised and empathised and went all the way around this. And I knew that I was defeated when the man said, well, can't you just bring it up to us and we'll weigh it? I'm like, mate, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? So that was my challenge, to try and find out something fun for the kids to work out how many double-decker buses high the bunker might be. But we did something of that sort, but it didn't really pan out how I expected.
As for me, nothing quite as exciting as Dave's challenge there, but not having visited RAF Bentley Priory since the days when you had to get past the guy on the gate with a gun, The biggest challenge for me was trying to get into my head the kind of layout of the museum and the how the exhibition space would work. It took me quite a while to get my head around that, and it's very difficult to kind of picture a single space. So very mundane challenge compared with Dave's. Well, as you can probably tell, we've enjoyed bringing this series of podcasts to you, and we very much hope that you've enjoyed listening to them. I think as well as we've reflected in preparing this podcast, the message we'd like to leave with you, if you've never volunteered before, are interested in history, interested in anything else, and simply want to get involved, I think our experience has shown then, do it, volunteer. There's lots to be had. There's lots to learn. There's lots of stimulation to be found. And there are lots of friendships to be found too.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's such a positive thing to end on, Tim. You know, as we've reflected in this, and, you know, we've mentioned working as a team has just been so rewarding in many ways, and I'd love to think, you know, other people could have the opportunity to do this and be involved as well. You know, even as I mentioned, our ages, you know, you can't be too old or too young really to be involved in something like this, and actually that dynamic is a positive, I think, more than anything. So yeah, definitely get involved if you want to or interested in something like this, for sure. Dave, is there anything you want to just add, you know, reflecting on that?
No, I agree with both of you, absolutely. And it's been a pleasure. Even, you know, reaching out on social media. We put this out on various mediums, Facebook. There's been a little bit on Twitter. The museum's only on social media as well. So that's kind of broadened their horizons as well. So, you know, I'd invite you all to keep doing that. Keep logging on, keep looking at the social media, keep interacting. I, for one, have made some great friends. I've learned a huge amount. I mean, honestly, a huge amount. I had no idea about the work of the Royal Observer Corps. Tim's very much brought us up to speed, all of us, with that. And now it's incorporated into the museum for all of us to enjoy amongst everything else that we've managed to put together. Couldn't have done it without Alex. A shout out to Eve as well. Initially, she was she pulled everything together and put our notes together and put everything to us. something that I can't do. I'm not very good at that. So we've all bounced skills off each other. We certainly have done that and met some very creative people. And of course, the team at the museum itself, the professionals, as they are, you know, all we do. I didn't realise that there were different roles, though. I didn't. You know, we've got education officers, and we've got Chloe, the project lead. We've got the directors there. And of course, we've got the trustees themselves, of which we've had the pleasure to interact with, something that I would certainly never have been able to get to that level before. So, you know, having the pleasure of having a cup of tea on the terrace with the senior members of the museum has been a pleasure. And I would reflect with great delight on my experience. So thank you. And thank you to the listeners as well for listening, because without you, of course, none of this would have been possible.
Yes, absolutely. Again, you know, thank you to everyone that has listened to this. I suspect we will be back with more podcast episodes. So I would listen out, stay tuned, check everything. And yeah, I'm sure we will be back at some point in some way or another. But what I would say is, you know, if you have enjoyed listening to these podcasts and, you know, if you've found anything particularly interesting, then, you know, please let the museum know. Also comment on the museum's posts of these podcasts, just so we know ourselves that we've done a good job, because that would be amazing. So yeah, thank you for listening, and hope to, well, not see you all, but talk to you all again very soon. So yeah, I guess it's our time to say goodbye. So goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Excellent.
I think we absolutely nailed that. That was brilliant.